Kildare Focus with Kira Noble.
Hello, you're very welcome in to Thursday's edition of Kildare Focus. What is it, the 16th of December today? I hope I find you very well this afternoon. Joining me in the next couple of moments will be the Secretary General of the Irish Pharmacy Union. On all age cohorts, they're going to be able to get a booster COVID-19 vaccine from their GP, but not their local pharmacy. Why? That's the question we'll ask Dara O'Loughlin. Niamh Kelly, Head of Marketing and Communications with Repack, will join us. This country is expected to generate 95,000 and tons of packaging waste this Christmas. I actually can't believe that. That's incredible. Ted Kenny, the SIP2 sector organiser, will speak about the representatives who are expressing their deep concerns. This is over the high level of pressure on ambulance, fire and emergency services. Tanya Sweeney is a columnist with the Irish Independent. She has written an opinion piece about an interview the singer Billie Eilish gave the other day. She said Billie Eilish's experience with porn should be a wake-up call to all parents. We'll hear what she has to think, or has to say, I should say, in the next few minutes. And then we'll be popping out and about with Pat Costello, who is in the KFM outside broadcast unit, I believe in Leixlip this afternoon and the surrounding area. So if you do see him, head up to Pat, get a request. You might be able to get a gift or something nice off him. I don't know what he's got in that OB unit. So chance your arm, as they say. Anyway, get in touch with me this afternoon. The number to get me on is 0833 97 97 97. That is our text and WhatsApp line in association with Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge. And of course, the phone line is 045 901 490. Caoimhe Harney is on that line if you'd like to speak with her this afternoon. And the email, studio@kfmradio.com. So it was very confusing for Irish pharmacists over the past 24 hours, as Dara O'Loughlin, who's the Secretary General of the Irish Pharmacy Union, was just telling me a few moments ago. It's good afternoon to you, Dara, and I guess ironing this out even for our listeners also. Pharmacies yesterday were sent out information that they would be administering the COVID-19 booster vaccine to all age cohorts, but then a quick 180, and it will only be those over the age of 50 who will be able to get a booster vaccine dose from their pharmacists, and pregnant women.
That's right. As things stand today, only people aged over 50 or healthcare workers or people of any age with an underlying condition or pregnant women can get their boosters in pharmacies. That's as it stands. That's the same as it was on Tuesday. Where the confusion arose was that yesterday morning a memo went out to all pharmacies with information from the HSE saying that they could prioritise all of those people, the over 50s and people with underlying conditions, but could also start working down through their patient cohorts to younger people, people in their 40s, people in their 30s and so on.
Now, many people may think this question I'm about to ask you is a bit irrelevant, because we know we've had huge numbers turn up at walk-in vaccination centres in particular throughout this country. And at the moment, they're catering the walk-ins from 50 and above, just like yourselves at the pharmacies. And I would assume within the next maybe week, maybe before the end of 2021, that a huge majority of those within those age groups will have received their booster vaccine, if they decide to receive one, that is. And the other age cohorts will be able to be addressed and vaccine administered to them. So if the HSE and GPs, because we've heard from GPs today, say, please stay at home if it's not something major. We've heard from the Irish Patients Association saying that this isn't good for people. We know a lot of people are diagnosed with other things when they go into their GP, when they are going forward for a pain in the rear or something, and it is something way more complex or complicated that they never expected to be diagnosed with. So they have got that backlog as is. Why shouldn't the government be looking at pharmacies to help them with the situation?
Well, pharmacists would agree with you. Pharmacists don't understand why we're not vaccinating all of the age cohorts, although we do agree that people should be prioritised in order of age or clinical vulnerability. And we know that people who are over 50 or people with underlying conditions are that more, a little bit more at risk to a bad outcome if they should get COVID. And pharmacies are at the moment incredibly busy doing booster vaccines. I mean, it's hard to get an appointment in a pharmacy, but there are still some slots. But yesterday, pharmacies did 10,000 boosters. And they did the same the previous day. So we are very busy with those target cohorts. The Taoiseach has indicated that he expects people in their 40s to be invited into vaccination centres or invited to register within the next week, or certainly before Christmas. And I hope that is the case. And whenever that moves in the vaccination centre, it will move in pharmacies at the same time. So we have always been vaccinating the same cohorts as the vaccination centres. What pharmacists are finding today is that they have huge numbers of people who obviously got wind yesterday that the age cohort system was gone and that anybody over 16 could register for a booster. And they're now inundated with people whom they have to say to them are not eligible yet to get their booster. I mean, we can take your name, we can take your number, but you can't yet get your booster in a pharmacy or a vaccination centre.
Okay, and
just touching on the other complaint, or the other issues as well that you were talking about, pharmacies are not stopping the regular care or the routine care. So pharmacies are maintaining all of that normal routine business. So anybody with prescriptions or who needs medication or who wants to talk to the pharmacist about an issue, all that is still happening in pharmacies.
Yeah,
we haven't stopped any of that.
Yeah, I was referring to the GPs there, not the pharmacies, just in case any listeners were confused by that. It's GPs by in large and in general that are saying for those not to turn up, I guess, as frequently as they may have before, even, you know, the past few weeks with this booster campaign. But just in regards to it, you're saying that the pharmacies obviously are incredibly busy, which no doubt they are. Does that mean that then ramping up the booster program, accelerating it within the pharmacies and having more age cohorts would put more pressure on the system and maybe pharmacies cannot handle that at the moment?
But pharmacies have been increasing their capacity steadily, and the number of vaccines being done in pharmacies has shot up. 3 weeks ago, we did 17,500 boosters in the whole week in pharmacies. 2 weeks ago, it was 31,000. Last week, it was 45,000. And now here we are doing 10,000 a day. So they've been adding capacity. They've really been putting the effort in. They've been pulling out all the stops because it is a national emergency. The Omicron variant is very worrying. We can see what the case numbers are like in the UK and in Denmark, where Omicron hit them earlier. And we're trying to protect as many people as we can. So pharmacies are playing the most active role that they can in the vaccination service. And more pharmacies are coming on board all the time. And they do believe that it should be possible for them to provide the vaccines to whomever wants it in their community, obviously in order of priority, but that nobody should be getting turned away.
Okay, so that is what you'd be asking government at the moment. We know now if you've been infected with COVID-19 over the previous 6 months, infected with COVID-19, you're asked not to receive a booster vaccine. I think it is for about 5 months afterwards. But that is changing. We know it's changed in terms of people who've gotten their second dose of a vaccine. It was originally 6 to 5 months. Now it's 3 months when you can get your booster dose. So you would be asking the government then basically that the pharmacies could administer to anybody who's eligible.
Yes, and let the pharmacists prioritise themselves within their own patient list. We will get the older people done first. We will get the clinically vulnerable people done first. But pharmacists, for example, feel a special sense of responsibility towards anybody who got the Janssen single dose vaccine during the summer. They probably got that in their pharmacy. We know that the immunity from that has waned, and it's been over 3 months since most people got that, and we'd be very anxious to be in a position to give booster vaccines to those people.
Yeah, that's a great point. As we know, many people did receive their Janssen vaccine from their local pharmacy. Well, Dara Loughlin, thank you very much, Secretary General with the Irish Pharmacy Union, and I hope you have a safe and happy Christmas, and thank you for all you've done for us here on KFM over the past few months. That's Dara O'Loughlin there. Now, do get in touch with me if you're somebody who has some questions in regards to the vaccination clinics. We know that the walk-in vaccination clinic at Punchestown will open again on Sunday. That's the next date as of right now, that is. That's the 19th of December, and that is opening for 50 to 69-year-olds for the booster COVID-19 vaccine at Punchestown on, as I said, Sunday the 19th between 9 a.m. and 12 p.m. Now, can you believe that as a country, over the Christmas period, we nearly generate 100,000 tonnes of packaging waste? Because I really, truly can't. Joining me now to chat about this is Niamh Kelly, who's the Head of Marketing and Communications with Repack. Hi, Niamh.
Hi, how are you, Ciara?
Good, good, thank you. So, as a country, we're expected to generate 95,000 tonnes of packaging waste. And the reason I can't believe this is because I do remember when I was younger, especially when you'd be receiving your toys from Santa, there would be a load of packaging with it, even like thinking back to Easter time and, you know, the Easter eggs. And we know nowadays the packaging waste has decreased so much compared to, would say, 15 years ago. Yet this Christmas, we're going to be near 100,000 tonnes.
I know it sounds like a huge amount, and it is quite a considerable amount, but it is to do with the festive period itself. So this is a forecast of, let's say, November, December, January. the amount of packaging waste. I'm not sure if a certain amount of it is actually to do with online, or is it to do with the COVID pandemic as well, that where we had a few years ago, I think you probably would have seen this, that we were moving towards, let's say, loose fruit and veg in a shop, whereas now it's gone back to the packaging again because of COVID. So there's a certain amount of that, but it's certainly not over and above what we would have seen in recent years.
Now, they are noting here, Repack as they, that to become more environmentally friendly, 43% of shoppers are planning to buy eco-friendly presents. 25% of people are saying that they will buy between 10 to 15 gifts this Christmas, and 49% to plan to spend only €300 or less. But moving away from the presents themselves, and, you know, food is such a huge part of Christmas. There's a huge amount of waste, as you're mentioning there, that will come from it that we didn't have prior to the pandemic. Obviously, as you're mentioning, due to COVID-19, people, I guess, are feeling safer and more secure by wrapping up their fruit and veg and stuff like that they may not have been purchasing before.
Yeah, and that is quite possible. I think it's, as I said, there's a certain amount due to the COVID pandemic. I think also, though, Ciara, it's something that we tend to do always around Christmas time, is to buy ahead and buy more just in case we need it. And I think what we're asking people to do is to kind of think about what you buy to prevent waste in the first place. So that, let's say, if you're buying in for Christmas and you're, you know, usually have 10, 15 people around, and if you only have your own family this Christmas, to kind of factor that into what you buy, because it's not just packaging waste, it's all waste. What we want to try and do is reduce waste, to reuse items, and then to recycle better and more.
Now, we know that since the start of September, all plastics can go into the recycling bin, which is great. Mm. And this has been mentioned by yourselves. But one of the questions I have to ask is again, in regards to the pandemic, I would assume, was there a decrease in waste for those few months that we were a full on lockdown in this country? Because people obviously weren't buying to the same extent as they were now. And do you think that maybe has accelerated the purchasing and potential extra waste that may happen this Christmas?
Well, to be honest, Ciara, we wouldn't have the stats yet for, let's say, the overall, the kind of peaks and troughs of 2021. We certainly would see that the amount of plastic packaging tons recycled between the start of 2019 and the end of 2020 went up by 9%. So that's good. That means people are doing the work. I think the concern is that often people will put things in a recycling bin, but maybe, let's say, you have a bag of recycling and you put it all into a bag in the house and you put it into the recycling bin. You have to put it in loosely, because otherwise that won't be recognised once it goes to the recycling facility. So it's really why we'd ask people to look or join Team Green, is to kind of inform themselves on how to recycle better. And okay, that will help then with the amount of hard and soft plastics that are being recycled.
Okay, that's a good tip. I don't think many people know that. You know, we've heard about the washing and drying, etc. But obviously to leave that space within your bin, because unfortunately when it does come to the day before the bins or the night before the bins, Niamh, as you probably know yourself, people do tend to pack them very, very tight. I can be somebody who does that. I actually did it the other night, so I did not realise that about the recycling bin. So that is good to know, Niamh. Thank you for letting me and probably a few others know that. And also it's good news, because Repack has said that Ireland is now exceeding the EU plastic recycling target of 22.5%, and to achieve the recycling targets of 50% by 2025 and 55% by 2030. So that's some good news here in this country. Niamh Kelly, Head of Marketing and Communications with Repack. Thank you.
Kildare Focus with Ciara Noble.
Now, SIPTU representatives have expressed deep concerns. This is over the high level of pressure that is on ambulance, fire and emergency services in this country. Joining me to discuss this is SIPTU sector organiser Ted Kenny. Good afternoon, Ted.
Good afternoon. How are we doing?
I'm good. Thank you. I'm going to assume, Ted, that these deep concerns probably didn't just rear its head since March 2020. These have obviously been there before.
Yeah, they've been there for some time now, to be quite honest. I suppose since March 2020, since the COVID crisis hit, that has actually made the problems a lot worse. So the length of times, we say for argument's sake, that it takes paramedics to offload COVID patients in A&E can take anything up between 4, 5, 6, 7 hours in some instances. And that then means that there's an ambulance tied up in A&E and they can't be sent out to do other calls.
And Ted, I'm just like, it just must be so much more complex even when it comes with, you know, the protocols that need to be followed after, you know, being in the vicinity of somebody who's a positive COVID case for those paramedics and then going out to the next case. If, you know, we want to beat this virus, which is what we want to do, that in itself isn't going to help the situation.
Well, at the end of the day, the paramedics are highly trained in infection control and that, and they wear full PPE when they're dealing with a COVID patient, and they decontaminate the vehicle and all before they actually go out to the next call.
Yes.
And they would change their PPEs and all that. So there is protocols in place that would be no risk to the public.
No, that's exactly what I mean, is that the time there, though, obviously because of those extra protocols that are in place, meaning that less people are being seen to, due to this pandemic, is exactly what I was trying to say there. Sorry, I might not have made that clear. So if we just look at the ambulance sector in particular, Ted, just how badly affected are they at the moment?
Well, there's a major shortage of staff. I mean, if you look at the ambulance service in Ireland, and it's modelled on the ambulance service in Scotland, and the last number of years, there's been significant growth in Scotland, but they've over 5,000 personnel now, and Ireland is still at 2,000. We should be up or at least have at least 4,000 personnel. And we're not going to achieve that overnight. That's going to have to be built on. But the government are going to have to put in resources and open up more colleges and more schools to train paramedics. And in order to entice paramedics into the system, they have to get the job descriptions, the rates to pay and all that aligned to other health professionals within the greater HSC.
Is the rate of pay one of the biggest issues?
It is. I mean, a paramedic starting off, a trainee paramedic starting off is on 25,000 a year. And if that paramedic is placed away from home, for argument's sake, they could be from Donegal, they could be placed down in Cork or placed in Dublin. And they could spend anything from 12 months to 2 years away from their home. And therefore then, as we all know, the rent costs and the cost of living is rising. And the standard of living, there's no one going to survive on 25,000 living in Dublin and have a meaningful quality of life. So why would people come in? So that's one of the biggest stumbling blocks, is the rates of pay. The other stumbling blocks is that the amount, the length of the shifts.
On average, Ted, how long would an employee within the ambulance, fire and emergency service be working per week?
When they have 12-hour shifts. So, I mean, it's 39 hours a week, but it means that, say, for argument's sake, they could do 12-hour shifts this week, 4 12-hour shifts next week. And over the space of the 2 weeks, they do 78 hours. The reality is, they're doing probably double that, you know? Definitely half of that, right? So what they're actually doing, they're probably putting up an extra 40 hours over 2 weeks. Because some of their shifts can actually overrun. So they're on at 8 in the morning to 8 o'clock at night. They mightn't finish at 8 o'clock at night till 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning. And that's causing difficulties and it's causing burnout. And the ambulance service is heavily reliant on overtime as well. Paramedics are burnt out and they're not making themselves available for the overtime all the time because of the fact that the shifts when they are in, they're working 15, 16 hour, 17 hour shifts.
From any conversations you've had with any government officials or anybody close to government officials, how high on the government's priority list do you think this deep concern that SIP2 representatives have is?
Well, I think it's after coming to the forefront now. I mean, it has been constantly in the media since, I suppose you could say, for the last 6 months in relation to horrifying instances around the country where waiting times, people waiting for ambulances, can't get ambulances, transporting people in cars to hospitals, people dying in cars, tragic events that are happening because there's no ambulance available. So the government, and yesterday we were in the Joint Oireachtas Health Committee, and they gave us an hour and a half, so we briefed them on it. Management of both Dublin Fire Brigade and the National Ambulance Service were in after us for approximately an hour and a half. So that committee is taken on board, and they want to see what recommendations come out of the working groups that SIPU has set up with Unite Trade Union, dealing with National Animal Service and the matters that are outstanding, and we hope to have them finalised either the end of this week or no later than the mid-next week.
Okay, well, yes, Ted, do you want to finish there?
Yeah, I'm just saying that, and then those recommendations as well will be furnished to the Joint Directors Health Committee.
Okay, Ted Kenny, SIPTU Sector Organiser, we appreciate your time. Coming up after the break, we will be speaking with columnist for the Irish Independent, Tanya Sweeney, on an opinion piece she's written about parents being called to wake up in regards to porn.
Kildare Focus with Ciara Noble.
Now, you may have heard this, but the singer Billie Eilish, she was speaking to a radio show over in the States, and she said that, "I think porn is a disgrace." That's a quote, and another quote from her. "I used to watch a lot of porn, to be honest. I started watching porn when I was like 11, she said. Now, Tanya Sweeney is a columnist with the Irish Independent Opinion and feature writer with that paper, and she has written an opinion piece on this. It's good afternoon to you, Tanya. Oh, I believe I haven't put you up on air there. Tanya, can you hear me now?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
I can. That was my bad. Anyway, listen, what exactly did you take from Billie Eilish's interview? Because you're warning parents, I guess, to be more aware and not to have their head in the sand, I guess you could say, when it comes to the issue of porn.
Yeah, I mean, okay, so the story broke earlier this week, you know, and basically Billie Eilish was on SiriusXM radio.
Tanya,
after,
unfortunately, wherever you are in the house, you're just...
Yeah, so Billie Eilish basically said earlier this week that, you know, she had accessed porn at the age of 11 years old and that it gave her nightmares and it really kind of messed up the development of her brain, she said. And she said that, you know, in her formative sexual experiences, it was all very, you know, kind of complex and not as she liked, because she had learned some very kind of strange things, I'll say, about, you know, consent and what was considered maybe acceptable in bed. And what I wrote in my piece in today's Irish Independent is, you know, she was 11 years old. I think a lot of parents might think that 11 is very young. Well, obviously, it's like very young to be watching pornography. But, like, kids are ingenious at finding stuff. You know what I mean? Like, you only have to look at Northwest Kardashian, who is whatever she is, she's 7 or 8 herself, and was able to access TikTok Live, you know, without her parents knowing what she was doing, you know? And we keep hearing all these stories about kids doing really strange things with phones, you know, whether it's buying €1,000 worth of ice cream through Uber Eats or whatever. I think your parents basically have to wake up and realize that kids are able to find pretty much anything on an electronic device, and
yeah,
that extends to pornography for sure.
It's also relevant to say that Billie Eilish is 19, so she did grow up
exactly,
like, in the time of, I guess, tech. And like, I'm near 10 years older than Billie Eilish, and I even know the difference between those, you know, 8-9 years are massive.
Of course. Yeah, those kids will be very literate now and will know. I mean, like, I think, you know, and I said this in the piece, parents, you know, think that when they put parental controls and, you know, they have curfews and they have all these kind of rules about changing Wi-Fi passwords, and I think that's going to inure their child from seeing the weird stuff online, and it really isn't, because kids are technological wizards compared to their parents.
Yes.
And you couple that with a child's febrile imagination and their curiosity, and they might have heard something funny in the playground, you know. I mean, it's an absolute, you're sleepwalking yourself into a disaster if you don't take the bull by the horns. You know?
She worded it by saying, talking about porn, that was, "I was not saying no to things that were not good," when she was having her own sexual experiences, because obviously she had been watching it. The only thing I would say about that is, isn't it good that those conversations are coming up now? Because, like, it wasn't as if, would say, Britney Spears, and no offence to Britney, because we all love her and we're so glad that her life has gotten better now that she's no longer in that conservatorship, but you didn't hear of people like Britney Spears, Christina Aguilera, even Beyonce, etc., talk about these types of things at that age.
Absolutely. Well, like you say, you know, I mean, Billie Eilish is 19, so she is probably one of the first generation of pop stars who will have grown up with, you know, as digital natives, you know, and have been, you know, exposed to this stuff at a very, very, very early age. But it is fantastic, because there is a number of teenagers who, you know, even though we are aware of what consent is, and they are aware that they are able to kind of, you know, be in the driving seat of their own sexual experiences up to a point, you know, watching pornography, it's a very sort of you know, it's very directed at the male gaze and male desire, shall we say, you know, without putting too much.
Well, it's absolutely directed at the male gaze, isn't it? It's fact.
I mean, you can find other stuff, obviously, you know, I mean, it is like saying, oh, literature is bad, you know what I mean? But if you're a child and you don't know what you're doing, you know, you're not going to know about, you know, ethical female-centered pornography, you know? And you're just going to find, I mean, I can't even imagine what it must be like to be 8 years old and have all of that information at your fingertips and not know how to navigate it or control it or process it, you know. So what I was saying in my column is you really do need to sit down with your kids. I think a lot of parents are they find the idea of having the talk with their kids a bit skeevy. They want to maintain what bit of innocence they have left, you know, and they don't want to, you know, scare. Or, you know, I think people think that if they start talking about pornography, it gives a child license to go off and you know,
Access it. Don't you think that comes from their own fear, because they're thinking, oh God, this, you know, it absolutely does come from their own fear, this child is too young, etc. But they themselves, as you're mentioning, you know, they didn't grow up, or they weren't how did you word it, digitally native, is that how you worded it there?
Digitally native, yeah. Look, I mean, I grew up in a house whenever someone had a particularly fruity snog on the television, my dad got up and turned the television off, like, you know, I'm that old. But, you know, I think there's parents, you know, that will just, you know, they want to believe that their children are still children at 8, 9, 10. And they, like I say, they think that introducing pornography to them is going to just, you know, explode their lives a little bit. And it's really not. And I think you need to, even younger than 8 years old, I think you need to start having these age-appropriate conversations. I mean, if your child knows how to unlock your phone, you know, and find their way around, I think you need to start having some fairly kind of focused conversations on all of that.
Yeah, I think parents need a lot more advice when it comes to that stuff, though, in fairness to them. As you're mentioning, it probably should be brought up a lot younger, but I don't think people have the tools out there. So maybe, hopefully, there'd be some services that will come around in the next couple of months and years. People hopefully have some time on their hands over this Christmas. It's going to be a bit quieter. And I think that would definitely be something a lot of parents would like to access. But listen, Tanya Sweeney, columnist, opinion and feature writer with the Irish Independent, thank you very much. I hope you feel better for Christmas, because you do sound a little under the weather. And thanks for everything. Take care.